WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the summertime, and it feels so good to have like baseball back, and you have Oriole Park behind me, because I get to reach to some of my old baseball heads. Some of them are going to be joining me on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. This week, we're at Spirits West over Wilkins Boulevard. I got some old Mount St. Joe Gales that want to come and crow in their purple. I'll be giving the Maryland Lottery 50th anniversary scratch-off. So it's been a lucky batch. Had a lot of winners the last couple of weeks as well. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free in 2 years. 0% financing. I'm enjoying my windows. And you know, I brought this crab claw along because this guy can get a lot of things. You know, he's one of us. He's sort of indigenous to the land up here in the land of pleasant living. But he's been down in Florida a little while, and they got those stone crabs down there. This is a Maryland crab claw with a proper beer opener on the other side, courtesy of my friend Raskin Global. Rick Vaughn has been my friend. Dare I say mentor in many ways in the PR space. And the first guy foolish enough to sign his name on an Oriole press pass for me back in 1985, as I remember working at the Baltimore News American, longtime Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time, now Tampa Rays PR director. He's now, much like Sowenstein and Animal House, gone independent. He has worked with Joe Madden for many, many years, including a pretty cool golf tournament up in the central PA area, but still makes his home down in Florida where all baseball initiatives are there. Rick Vaughn, the man, the myth, the legend. I can't believe it's been like 31 years since the last thing at 33rd Street and your orchestration of a great, great sports memory. How are you, man? The Rays and the Orioles get together for meaningful baseball. I'm like, I got to find somebody to talk about it. Here you are.
we're doing great. Yeah, they're here. Of course, they're here tonight. So we're excited to see that. And you know, I was with the Orioles for 10 years and I was with the Rays for 20.
Wow.
If you want to know something, I have to say it. And I'm not saying this because I'm on your show, but my heart is in Ballmer, man. It really is. I'm Oriole all the way. I worked there at such a great time. We didn't win, but there was so many good things that happened there and bad things to learn from. 21 game, you know, losing streak, but closing Memorial Stadium, opening Camden Yards, hosting the 93 All-Star Game. I can't tell you how proud I was to have been the PR guy when we hosted that All-Star game in 93, because the city just was spectacular. And everybody that went to that All-Star game for the whole weekend, whether it was Fan Fest or the party the night before or the game, even though it was like 100 degrees.
Dude, I had corn on the cob with Geddy Lee at the Science Center at that gala on the night before the game.
And no way.
Yeah. I literally looked over at the buffet and Geddy Lee was standing there amongst the harvest vegetables from the Eastern Shore. And I went up to Geddy Lee and I said, probably something stupid. Yeah, like your dog barking. Yeah, probably just something he doesn't remember at all. But
well, there's three of them, so there's a good chance one of them can bark during the show.
That's fine. What kind of dogs you got?
We have two, they're all rescues. We have two Poms and then we have a mutt, and she's only a couple years old, but she's great. So,
man, if I could get my cat to come in here and just sit here, I could get sponsors for it and stuff. Cause my cat's so beautiful, but she's got stage fright. Except if I put like shrimp up on the table here, she'll come and eat it. Rick, busting your chops, but not busting your chops at all. In all sincerity, I worked at the paper as a bit of a gopher in the 80s. You gave me a press credential. I talk about the smell of those fried crab cakes up, and they served beer and ice cream. And there were nice ladies who smiled at us, and there were press notes and legends.
Helen and Hazel
were beautiful ladies, right?
Love
so you give me a press credential, and I ran around. I'll never forget being at the locker Juan Nieves when he threw the no-hitter that night, getting quotes and running quotes for Ken Rosenthal and Jim Henneman. So I start my radio show between 91 and 92. Kenny Albert and I started the show December 13th, 1991. So it's 31 and a half years ago. I started NST, our 25th anniversary is coming up. So I'm making you a little bit of a part of this, because on August 3rd, we will have been here 25 years as a radio station, paying all of our bills, employing people. Listen, an unbelievable thing that's happened.
Congratulations.
Since thank you. Yeah. That's beautiful. But you're such a part of it. And I just want to I want to bust your chops, but give you a hard time and have some fun too. But in 91 to 92, you were the king of the castle. The Colts are gone. You would have bet your life that we were never getting a football team here, right? I mean,
right.
You're like the stars were heavily aligned that football would never return here.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really hard headspace. And this beautiful stadium was opening, and Kenny Albert and I decided to start a sports radio show in 1992. Not only did you credential me, but you gave me parking in parking lot B, which was way over here. And you're like, no, first year on the show, you have to earn parking lot A.
I actually remember this conversation.
You made me wait two seasons. I think you had to get through 93. And funny enough, when Angelos bought the team, you started flipping in the A parking passes somehow because I was established or something. But you made me pay my dues. And I think you said something really like offhanded to me, like you're young enough to walk. We'll give Henneman if Jackman needs a pass in A, we'll give him an A. But you wait your turn, nasty Nestor, But back then, and I want to really compliment you on this, and I want to talk to you about this because it's really important for the Orioles. And if I owned the team, I'd hire you back. You know what I mean? And I'd hire Marty Conway, and I'd hire all of you to come back and shake people's hands and be nice to people. Because,
yeah,
like, you didn't have to be nice to me. You didn't have to let me in. You guys were the king of everything, and BAL had the rights, and Cal Ripken and Camden Yard. But there was a thing about all of you, and whether it was you or Charlie Steinberg or Bob, any of you, there was something about, like, you love baseball, you're from Baltimore, you want to promote my team. I mean, you had Alan Wiggins. Bad things happened when you were there.
Yeah.
But, like, there was a part of the team that was so part of the community, and you always wanted that for Tampa. And then you went down there and you found out how hard it is to do. And they're trying to do it again here. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know Baltimore better, 30 years removed, but it's unbelievable to see this new thing and see this empty canvas and have a chance to do it again. And I really want to reach to you about that because I think you saw 92 as that, even though there was a built franchise, Camden Yards created an empty canvas that you took full advantage of.
It did. Yeah, it really did. I mean, I think the cool thing was, I mean, look, no one wanted to leave Memorial Stadium. We had so many great memories there. The O's won, the Colts won. It wasn't, looking at it very matter of fact, it wasn't a greatly constructed ballpark, but it had so many good memories. And when we left there, one thing I really have to tip my hat to Larry Lucchino, because Larry realized how important that ballpark was to the community. And that when we left, we needed to do it very respectfully. We knew that everybody was going to warm to Camden Yards. I mean, we've seen the models, we've seen everything. And it was like, they're going to love this. People are going to love this thing. And that was, that was Janet Marie Smith and Lucchino. I mean, I love the fact, they were like, we're going to build a Baltimore building and we're going to put a baseball field in it. That's kind of
but
the way.
But you have to know Baltimore people to do
right.
that.
That's right.
But Larry
That's
came right. here and all he heard was you're moving the team to D.C.
Right.
And all these years later, as a kid at the paper, right, where I was there every night, I was around every Stedman, all these people, and we're always Herb Belgrad, we're trying to get a football team, we're trying to do all of these things, and the thought that the baseball team could leave was on Larry's desk all day, every day, right?
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
And 30 years later, all of you speak of him, and all of you speak to me, all of you, Cope, Conway, Janet Marie, all of your era, Lisa, everybody that worked there, you all come on my show and speak of him with such, not reverence, he doesn't write your paycheck anymore, he might have been a jerk to you or whatever. All of you speak of him as the leader of all leaders in regard to all of how all of this was orchestrated. The fact that the Orioles are still here, had he gone into Edward Bennett Williams and said it might be a better idea to just go to D.C., That could have happened. I mean, and I don't think people here have any sense of the history of what the balance looked like from 84 until 96 when everything here changed.
Yeah. Larry was not easy to work for. Larry was, he is an emotional, Italian, and he and I had our clashes, no question about it. But the one thing that was undeniable was, yes, he was Washington, but he grew up in Pittsburgh. He grew up in that same almost kind of town mentality that Baltimore has, and he understood that. And his passion for wanting this to be done well, that trumped everything. I mean, you couldn't help but see when he got upset about things was because he cared about it so much. And I think when we went to him, Charles and I went to him in January of 91, and we said, here's what we want to do to close the stadium. It's not going to be cheap. We're going to bring in a bunch of players.
We flew Louie in from Venezuela.
Right. We put them up in the hotel for a couple of nights. We got the unit. We made the uniforms that they wore during their era. And to his credit, he didn't really hesitate. You know, I thought it was going to be a really hard meeting to sell him on it. It wasn't. He thought it was a great thing. It was respectful. So none of that happens without him. So was he easy to work for? No. But I would take him over anybody I've ever worked for as a club president because he cared so much. And so he had that common thing with people like Bob Brown. They were on opposite sides most of the time, but they had one common thing. They loved Baltimore. They had passion for this project. And that's where I learned, you know, before Camden Yards, I was so fortunate that to be there, to grow up in the Orioles organization. Like I said, we didn't win when I was there, but there was such a feeling between the team and the community. Of course you would treat people the right way. That's the Oriole way. That's how you do things. I would never have done anything different than what I did because that's what I learned. It was still a mom and pop operation when I started there. We all knew each other's families. We all knew everything about everybody. And not to knock what's going on now, but when I worked with the Rays, my bosses couldn't tell me even if I had kids, you know what I mean? So it's just become more impersonal. And back then I was so fortunate to be a part of a family, and it was a family. It really was. Even when we were in spring training together, we did events as employees, media, players. We did these cookouts and stuff where everybody
came. That media baseball game that you threw in 92, the day that Frank Robinson died, I like was looking for things of me and Frank or whatever. And Frank was always salty to me. I think maybe he didn't get along with Louie. I mean, all these years later, there were guys that were nice to me and guys that weren't. I dropped my cousin's name or they'd see my last name if they had a good vibe. So I don't know, but like he didn't do the show a lot. He was always standoffish with me, but I have a picture. He rung me up as the umpire in that game. Peter Schmuck on a 3-2 pitch was way outside and low. And but Frank Robinson, that thing you did that day, Tim Kurkjian's in that picture. Like all of these Rosenthal, we all played broadcast versus print out on the Camden Yard. You videoed. There's a videotape of it floating around.
Somewhere. I can't find it.
Come on, Vonner.
I'm still trying to find it.
So anyway, but there, I just, where we are at this point where there's no pressure on the teams, there's no tough questions, they've overtaken the media, there's some antitrust issues and putting people like me out of business, but there's more to all of it, whether it's I'm watching the NBA or watching the NHL or watching any of these things, they don't feel like community concerns until they need to be a community concern and need to sell local tickets, local skyboxes. I mean, the Orioles have just skated for 30 years since you left and everybody there left. And now they have a really good product again. And that's new prices for beer, downtown's changed, like all of these things to get people back. And the weirdest thing is the media this weekend, right? Like I couldn't watch the game on Peacock Sunday. I want the game, can't find it. I'm not giving my home and address and credit card number away to watch a game on television on a Wi-Fi. But then they do things like fix the timing of the game, the pitch clock, the thing on second base in the 10th inning. I mean, some of these things that were controversial, and Theo knows better than anybody, as your partner Joe Madden would say, but there's parts of the game that is a 55-year-old Aparicio. I want to be involved and I want to come back. But the old feeling of like, it's Baltimore's team and they put a Nike swoosh in an Under Armour town on a Baltimore jersey. Like all of it's just so jumbled to me, but the game itself is better than it's been in a long time. And I want to see this do well again. I want to see this be the heartbeat of the city again, the way that you know it to be. And you came in here during some dark times, Rick. You came in here with the Rays at the end of your run where you're looking around and it's friends and family and you're like, what happened here? There's nobody here. Yeah. That they have a chance again. And I want it to blossom, and talking to people like you about it, who went down to Tampa and didn't have it You didn't roll out with Earl Weaver and Boog's Barbecue. And I mean, you really fought the fight down there, and they've built something we want now somehow, right? I mean, like what was left from Joe Maddon in that era and Friedman and all those guys, books were written about that. And now we're chasing that to say, how do we build it better the next time around? How can John Angelos, if he's so inclined, be a Rocky Wirtz and build this thing better?
Yeah, I mean, the Rays have got the secret sauce when it comes to, you look at their lineup and they have, a few of homegrown people, but a lot of their guys are people they have stolen away from other clubs. People don't want to trade with them. You know, they really don't, because if you look at that lineup, there's about six guys in there that they were kind of castoffs from other organizations, and they come in and they blossom. They get the best out of their players. I don't know how they do it. I don't know what they do, but they do it. And, they're still haven't figured out. I don't know what's going to happen down here in terms of a stadium.
That used to be the lead story. I mean, it should be the lead. Hey, by the way, Rick, the lead story here, we're 21 minutes into this segment. There's no lease for the Orioles.
Wow.
Right? That is the lead. I don't want to bury the lead.
Yeah.
The lead is there's no lease. So to your point, waiting on this Oakland thing, which I talked to Barry Bloom last week and Mari Brown, I had Eric Fisher on talking about them waiting for this because baseball doesn't move franchises, right? Like, and the Tampa thing, I know your heart's there. You live there. It could be better. It could be a lot better.
Oh, there's no question. They've been there 25 years. You know how many times they've drawn 2 million in a season?
Once.
That's right, the first year. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that this works here. I don't know that Florida baseball works in Major League Baseball. I mean, certainly.
Man, that's heartbreaking to hear you say that.
Well, it is. I don't want to say it, but it's hard to argue. I mean, this team right now, last week, they played two first-place teams came in and played them on a homestand, a seven-game homestand. And you know what? They drew 20,000 one time in seven games. That there's something that's not right. You know, you can't find a better reason to go to the ballpark than what's happening there right now. They're fun to watch. They get.
I don't hate that dome, by the way. I know everybody else does. I don't hate that dome. I really don't. I don't think it's an awful place to go. I've been there many times with you. You spent half your life in there. I've never thought it's awful. I don't know why it's perceived as awful. Or driving across the bridge or things that I don't want to, Dundalk and Essex don't get, I mean, Baltimore and Washington, they think we're the same market. We're not. But I would say for that area, I've never hated the experience. And I know you guys busted your ass for many, many years to make it a good experience. And my wife threw out a first pitch. I mean, you tried to be, you're a nice person. And all of the people there tried in so many ways to recruit fans,
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? You're right. The people that live here, they don't really dislike the dome because, like, right now, it's 94 degrees out. And they know they're going to go to a ball game, A, definitely going to get played, even though it's the rainy season. And two, they're going to get out of the – or B, they're going to get out of the hot weather. And they know they're going to be cool watching a game. A lot of people here that live here don't like – they don't mind it. But you know what? When you go on the road and you go to these other ballparks like Baltimore and many others – and you go, and you kind of like you have this little envy, it's like, wow, look at what they're able to do. And so that's where that comes from. And the media picks up on it. And it's really, even from the media standpoint, they like covering games there. It's all very convenient. You know, we made it pretty easy for them to get around in the ballpark. But you look at it and then you look at Dodger Stadium, you look at Camden Yards, you look at any of the other places and you're like, boy, look at what we are missing, so that it's kind of a tough situation. But here's the other thing. Now they're trying to make a deal with St. Pete. They have a new mayor here. Looks like they're making some progress, but they're not ready to get married to St. Pete yet. They're still talking to Tampa. This is all going on right now. And yet.
So pretty much the same thing happened in Atlanta with the city and the county, right?
That's right. That's okay. Right. That's right. And then, but your lease here is up after 2027. So we're at 2023 now, and they don't have a deal yet. The clock is starting to tick. Now, I would assume that if they stay in St. Pete, they could extend the lease somehow. But if they decide to go to Tampa, I don't know how that would work at all. So
it's crazy when you think about this, right? Because the Giants were coming to St. Pete at one point, leaving Oakland. Oakland wanted to go to San Jose and got blocked. Now Oakland's trying as desperately as Montreal going to San Juan, right? Like trying to get there. And you have these municipalities that already have a team and can't get, I mean, like it's like your former team in Washington. I dare I say the R word, but your former football team. I mean, Maryland doesn't want them. Virginia doesn't want them. DC, nobody wants them. And it's just a shame, right? And I guess part of that is 25 years of you trying to build community to have it matter to people in a way that it mattered so much here, right? And the Ravens matter so much here. It's a different mindset there, right?
There's no question. I mean, and part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, when I got there in 84, you know, the team had been there 30 years. People were, because of the way the Orioles had done business and won, you know, they had that connection with everybody. Everybody couldn't wait to help. When we did the All-Star game there, I had people, I got the Oriole advocates to help me as volunteers. Man, I had so many more people that wanted to work there than jobs we had. Everybody wanted to help. They wanted to be a part of it. They wanted, you know, it really mattered to them. And I don't think we've ever been able to get to that point yet, you know, where the Rays have been there 25 years. So, you know, their first fans are just now, you know, in their mid 20s, and
no different than the Ravens, fans here. Right.
Right.
But there's been a success and the wanting and losing the Colts and like all that we PSLs, you know, all that we went through here, your baseball team's gone through a hockey team down there that's come and taken the place by storm. Would have bet on it. I mean, I sat on the top with Phil Esposito a couple of years ago, watching those Caps games and seeing what happens outside of that arena. I was down there for Springsteen a couple of months ago. Like, and that arena is nothing special. And then the Tom Brady effect of the Buccaneers in recent years. I mean, Tampa's a pretty good sports town, as you know, the late Chris Thomas and the late the Big Dog would tell you, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, one thing that I've learned in all the years I've been doing this is ownership is everything. And Jeff Vinnick, the guy that owns the Lightning, I don't think there's a better owner in all of sports. Talk about getting it. He gets it. There's nothing. He's like, you know, when I moved down here, I thought George Steinbrenner just owned the Yankees and he was, you know, a miserable son of a gun. He was so involved in the community down here. It was crazy. You couldn't go two blocks without seeing something he'd built or he was behind. And Vinnick has captured that same kind of a thing. He is so involved. And the great thing about it is he's able to get the players to buy into it as well. You know, they have a thing where they give away at every game, pretty good. They give away $50,000 at every game to a local charity. You have to apply as Respect 90 local charity. We applied, we won. It was during COVID, and we couldn't go out to the game to get the award, but they had one of their players do the video for us. And I got to tell you, this player, when I got done watching that video, I felt like the player knew everything about us. You know, here's a player. Can you do the video for us of the charity that we're going to give the money to? He wasn't like he just read it off a piece of paper. He did it with such compassion. And so it was so good. And it happened to be Stamkos, their best player. But it was like he knew what we were doing. I told Joe, and when I saw it, I went, do you know him? And he goes, no, I've never met him. But the point of that was he really bought into what Vinnick and the team wanted him to do. This was not reading off a teleprompter. I mean, he probably did, but he did it with such passion that it was like you could see that the players get into it. But the ownership, to me, is everything. And if you not only get the community to buy in, you get your players to buy in, you get the front office to buy in, and he's done that down here. He's done that down here. There's nothing. You just get the sense that there's nothing they wouldn't do to help the community. It's such a great feeling, and you can't help but root for them, and everybody down here does. They sell out every night, and I'm very envious. I would have loved to have worked with someone like him.
How many years in professional sports public relations and marketing were you?
30
10 with Baltimore, 10 with Orioles, 20 with the Rays. How many with the Redskins?
Just two with the Redskins, and I had two with the USFL.
I forgot about that. I mean, who
so
would remember 34 that?
34 years there, and then about another 3 or 4 years in college SID.
Rick Vaughn is our guest, the other wild thing, longtime Baltimore Orioles PR director during the Camden Yards and opening the gates in Tampa and trying to start things there, and now working with Joe Maddon all these years later. Baseball itself and the leadership. Listen, I've written books about these struggles, right? I read books like Lords of the Realm 30 years ago about how the sausage is made, right? And then Angelos comes in here and you're gone and Larry's gone. And next thing you know, you're in Tampa and I'm meeting Vince Namoili and his wife and sisters on planes and, but seeing all of this ownership transition, I guess from Uberoth to Selig to Manfred and the changes in the game, whether it was interleague play, whether it was steroids, I mean, all these things that have happened. Where are you on the baseball genesis of the beginning of the next thing with shorter games, understanding media, getting the games to actually come to me when I want them? Do you have confidence in the leadership that baseball there's a little part of this that feels like they're moving in the right direction, at least acknowledging time of game, bullpens, the things that they are at least acknowledging has brought me back. And maybe we got a winning team here again, but baseball's leadership has been very, very marred over the last 30 years. I mean, they are much like horse racing and some other things, while football has just ascended and the NBA has ascended. It's sort of been stagnant, certainly in our market in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think they've made a good number of mistakes along the way, missteps along the way. I do think what they've done recently, when I have some free time down here, I score some of the minor league games, Clearwater Threshers and some of the other teams. And they started the pitch clock like 3 years ago in the Florida State League. And I remember the first game I went to cover with it, I was like, oh, I'm not a fan of this at all.
Now, hold on. You were a pitcher, were you not?
In college.
I just want to bring that up. You pitched at George Mason, if I'm not, right. I'm correct. So you are a pitcher. So every pitcher is going to hate it, right?
Well, and I did. I mean, at least I thought I would, and I'm like, this is going to really not be great. And I've got to tell you something. After three innings, I forgot it was even there. And by the end of that first game, I went, you know what? I was wrong. I think this is going to be awesome. And it is. And I think it's the best of all the changes. This is the one that to me is what makes the most sense. And it's had the biggest impact. Is that you don't even realize the clock's there after a while. It's just a matter of a culture change, and now these guys in the minor leagues are going to get used to it, and they're not even going to remember 4 or 5 years from now that there wasn't a pitch clock. You know what I mean?
There's still people that don't remember that the NBA had 2 points and there was no three-pointer, right?
No, they did?
Yeah.
But it changes the light. It just changes your thinking, and this is going to happen, I think it's a terrific thing. I'm not as big a fan. I still wish that the hitters could learn how to hit against the shifts, and they didn't have to. You got a guy who's hitting 400 right now. Why do you think that is? We haven't had anybody hit 400 in a million years. We got a guy now. It's almost halfway through the season who's hitting 400 for the Marlins. Got 5 hits last night.
I was going to say, I knew Tony Gwynn. Shift on his ass. Go ahead. He'll hit 440 on you.
Well, that's right. That's exactly right. I remember George Brett saying, if they ever shifted against me, how would you feel about the shift? And he said, I've hit 400 against that, because he learned how to go the other way. Now, I get it. You got guys throwing 97 and 98, and they're throwing in. How do you hit that ball the other way? You got to figure it out. But anyway, if people seem to be very happy with what's going on with the game, and the game seems to be in really good spot right now. I don't like all the rule things. I don't like the rule about only throwing over to first base a couple times. I don't think that's a good rule, but I don't like rules that really are going to impact the statistical stuff. And I guess the shifting, it looks like it is going to affect the statistical stuff. This guy's, I don't think he's going to hit 400 for the year, a raise, but he's going to hit pretty good. And I think a lot of it has to do with that. But I think the game, I've always felt like the commissioner's office seems to take 2 steps forward and then 2 or 3 back. It just, they do something that they don't handle things always the right way. But I think this has given them 4 or 5 steps in the right direction. And hopefully they'll keep the momentum going that way.
Well, I mean, you worked in front office. Something's always on fire, right? Like, you know, there's always something to put out. Right now, this Oakland thing's a problem. Your franchise in Tampa is a perennial problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big thing. When I worked, I was only in the NFL for 2 years. But the mindset of the NFL office and mindset of MLB couldn't be more different. And if you think the NFL would have allowed the Oakland A's situation to go on like this, or the Rays situation to go on like this, to me, the NFL totally understands that you're only as good as your worst franchise. And so they're not going to, that would never happen in the NFL. They've let this, you know, just fester and fester and fester. And he said, it had to be 7 years ago. The commissioner said, well, as soon as we get those situations fixed, we're going to expand. That was 7 years ago, at least 7 years ago. And to me, so you're allowing these issues to keep the whole rest of the league from expanding, you know, from moving forward. And I don't think the NFL would ever do anything like that. I mean, they just, you know, that whole NFL shield, it's everything, man. The shield is everything. It's all and I never felt like that in all the years I worked in baseball. It's like working for a McDonald's franchise, you know, you have 30 different franchises, but they're not really very unified. And I think that still plagues the league today.
Well, as the number one chronicler of all things Peter Angelos and the Peter Principles and the Masson move and the Nationals, and it's been 18 years and they haven't paid the bill. Anybody that ever met Peter would know he was never going to pay the bill, and he will die having never paid the bill, leaving it to his children in this state. And the Nationals now can't sell after being owned for 17 years and a dead owner, and they can't figure out how to liquidate the team because they never got Montreal figured out to begin with. And they went into business with Peter angry with no finality. And they're two decades into this, and it's affected the Nationals, and they've had a parade. It affects the Orioles kind of every day in every way. And to your point, I think you said it all when you're like, the owner is everything, and being present, and in Larry's case many years ago, or in the case of the Tampa Lightning, there's just something about that there's no substitute for that. There's no elixir for not being feet on the street.
No, there's no question that's what the Orioles were when I was there, and hopefully they'll get back to that. But you're right, it was feet on the street. It was, we kind of felt like, you know, any fan that walked up was important. That's the feeling I got when I worked there. No matter what it was, that's one of our people. That's one of our family. We got to take care of that guy. He couldn't park his car where he wanted to, or his seat was obstructed.
Well, the thing that's so obnoxious to me, that's incredible to me, and this speaks to the Chad Steele thing with the Ravens, is they don't really, in the modern era, understand that my basement is purple and I've built my family, my bar mitzvahs, my weddings, my life, my travel, my son's name, my dog's name, the name of my boat, the name of my street, the purple flamingo on my lawn. Like, that shit means something to people. It means a lot to people. And when they come at any point and have a cold hot dog, a bad experience, dare I say something bad happens, parking their car in the city, whatever the bad experience is, in the era of social media, they're probably much more likely to point that out than they would be to not point that out, or to just be like, in Tampa, I'll go to the beach today instead. You know, you have other options. I am not committed to having to be an Oriole and Raven fan for life and give you my money like an ATM. And that family feeling that the Cardinals have, that the Steelers and the Packers have spent there forever, that the Rams will never have in LA ever again, that the Chargers will never, ever, ever have no matter what. I mean, they're just these dead on arrival sort of franchises. And then there's a Tampa Lightning that went, the day they showed up and you were there, you're like, hockey. Yeah, sure. But then they take it to heart, right? In a way that only human connection can make that happen. It can't happen on an ad on Facebook. It has to come from your heart. And when that fan comes up to you, that fan has a Christmas tree with an ornament on it that says Orioles, because they love the Orioles and it meant something to their grandfather. Like, it's a, and the people that work there don't really understand that. And they really don't.
No, they didn't. You know, I mean, look, I don't want to sound like, you know, get off my lawn guy or anything, but it's so hard now because everything is, there's no, people don't call you. You don't talk to anybody on the phone. You know, there's no interpersonal stuff. Never. You know, you either, if you want to connect with a friend, with a franchise or a business, send us an email and you might hear back from them, but you might not. You know, there's none of that. There's
if
none
you
of that.
If you complain too hard, you definitely won't be heard back from.
No. And you know, I mean, there's just, it's just our society now. It isn't, you know, it's not just germane to sports teams or anything. It's just the way it is. And I'm sad for that. Those connections were some of the best things, you know, that I ever had, you know, that was feeling that satisfaction. I know it sounds like really Pollyannish, I guess, but I always felt great to be able to help one of our fans. That's what our job was at the end of the day. You know, to me, if you work in a front office of a team, and probably most businesses, if you had to boil down your job responsibilities to the fewest words you could, to me, when at least working where I was, it was all about two words: building relationships. That's what it was all about. And I don't think that, and I guess maybe they're still
trying. That's still the number one thing in any walk of life, in any business,
right,
with any school, with any community, with any politics, with anything. It's about building relationships. And I just find it fascinating that they're too big to fail. I mean, like, literally. Especially the NFL team here has gotten the britches, as big as Peter's britches were, when he was ushering good humans like you out the door and said, I'll just replace Rick Vaughn. I'll just replace Marty. I'll just replace Larry Lucchino. I'll just replace Baker Koppelman and Roy Summer. Just replace these people. They're disposable humans. There's a mindset about that in sports that I have seen in before my very eyes, still being a half a foot involved in it because they've shoved me 3/4 of the way out the door, then I'm just marveled by it, but it is too big to fail. I mean, the Orioles have been awful for a generation in almost every measurable way, except financially. And that's the only thing that really mattered in the end, because television, the cable bills, the national television money, that they never had to hold it together. They just lowered the payroll and it still worked.
Yeah. I just, you know, look, if you haven't experienced it, then you don't miss it. But see, I remember, to me, like, some of the most important people that we hired when I was in Baltimore were the guys that ran the press box, Fred and Dave and Vernon. I still remember all three of them. Like, I saw them yesterday and I haven't seen them in 30 years.
He's still on my Twitter once in a while. I love Dave.
But those guys, when you walked in that press box, it was like their living room. You know, they wanted to make sure that you didn't have anything. You had everything that you needed there. And that mentality was what our organization was like back then. You know, if you were in Memorial Stadium and you had an issue, it needed to be addressed. Like you talk about Helen and Hazel in the media dining room. They wanted to make sure everybody that came through there had a great meal.
The thought of them and the mention of them makes me smell fried crab cakes. And they listen, if you want that crab cake, they serve it at a place called Davis's Pub in Annapolis. Exact same crab cake fried in that. I've had crab cakes at 300 places, Rick.
Trust me on this, okay? I know you.
So, but when I went there on that, it was 98 degrees that day. And Tom Marr, T-Bone Tom, sent me down there saying, you want a press box crab cake? And I was going to go to the boatyard, and I saved the boatyard, and the governor came and did it with me at the boatyard instead. But I went to this place, and I'm telling you, if you want to see her smile again, Hazel and Helen, and smell that crab cake, Davis's Pub in Annapolis in Eastport. Trust me. That's the tartar sauce is better there than what they gave you in the press box on 33rd Street. Rick Vaughn is our guest. I got to let him go. I love him. I can hold that. Before we go, I've spent some, we've been old white guys, get off my lawn, old Latin guy in my case. I'm still a minority, even though I'm a majority minority. Respect 90. Talk about Joe a little bit. And because so much of what we talk about are things that are lost amongst us old get off my lawn guys. But respect and community and these things that, Joe's got enough money to do whatever he wants to do. He comes back to Pennsylvania and he's feet on the street, boots on the ground with you, doing things in his hometown. And I know you've been a part of this for almost 20 years now with Joe.
Yeah, I feel so lucky to have worked with Joe. And you know what? Everybody always says, oh, you must have some great Joe stories, you know. And you know what? The stories that I have with Joe are basically being in situations that were difficult and having him find a way out and keeping people positive. You know, like we would go into his office every night I'd bring the radio guys in to do the pregame show. And we just lost our last 10 or 12 games, and or we were in a 4-20 thing. This was his first year. And by the time we walked out of that office, we felt pretty good about things. And it wasn't that he was trying to sell us. It was just how he was. And he would say, it was just the positive stuff. Like he would say, you know what? This is in like, what, 2006, 2007. First 2 years there where we were terrible. And he'd say, we're going to turn this place into the pit. Nobody's going to want to play us here. And we were like, sure, Joe, sure. Yeah, we get it. And it happened. You know, it happened. And it wasn't, he wasn't just trying to put up a front. He believed it. He really believed it. And so I think my, you know, to me, my relationship with Joe has been the best thing that's happened to me is, you know, he's taught me how to get through tough spots, you know, how important it is to remain positive, you know, and he's just been incredible that way. There were so many days when I would come in there in the office and I'd be upset about something. He'd go, what's the matter? And I'd tell him, he goes, you know, something that involved the team. And I said, well, he goes, well, we'll fix it. What do you want us to do? I'll fix it. We'll move what we were going to do.
That's
to
what
another
power is supposed to do, right?
Right.
I mean, literally, right. When you speak to power, power is supposed to say, I'm going to do everything in my power to fix it because it needs to be fixed. And I acknowledge a problem, right?
Yeah. And those are my best stories with Joe, is how many times I went through things like that with him and how often that he was good. But, you know, when you go up to Hazleton and you spend some time with him, which I've done, I don't know, 50 times. You see his roots. I mean, he's, you know, he'll be getting into his car on the street and somebody will drive by honk and I'll say, who was that? And he goes, oh, that's my third cousin, you know, or it's that whole city up there is his family, you know, and it's because he didn't forget them. And he still is close with all of them. And he also has this unbelievable ability when he talks to people. And this happened so many times when we'd be on the road and I'd introduce him to somebody. They would leave thinking they just met their best friend. You know, that
I felt that way about Joe Madden when you introduced.
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna probably hear from Joe this week. You know what I mean? That's just his way.
I feel like I know Joe Madden, and I've been with him 5 times. Every time I've been with him, he's made me feel like, and not with you or without you. I've been with him. I've run into him places, nothing to do with you. I noticed him in the dugout in the cold and rain in San Francisco, wearing an Anaheim Angels jersey during the World Series. I'm there early doing my show. The weather was terrible. Tony Bennett came out and sang I Left My Heart in San Francisco a cappella to warm up. Hair on the back of my neck, still standing up from that. But this guy's in the corner looking with these weird glasses. Everybody's hanging out with him. Now, he's the pitching coach, so he's kind of there. Not pitching coach, he was the bench coach. He was the bench coach, so he was there sort of in the dugout. And, you know, obviously the genius is the manager there, right? You know, the former Dodger and like all of that. And they're in the World Series and there's Barry Bonds and Kent and like all those guys. And it's Pac Bell Stadium and there's the Bay and all this. And Madden's out there just sitting in the dugout talking to everybody. And everybody came up to him, all the reporters. And I would have told you at that time, he's like a Southern California dude. Like I would have never have known he's from Hayes. My father's from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I would have never have heard any Pennsylvania or anything like that. And then he becomes your manager. I'm like, that's the kind of wacky dude that I saw in the corner of the dugout during the World Series. Calm as it, like in the World Series, and it's everything's calm, and he's just hanging out with reporters and being like a Tuesday night spring training game or something. And then I met him with you, and then I met him at a random Trop event during the Super Bowl with Max Weinberg. Me, him, Max Weinberg from the E Street Band are in a conversation about wine and Springsteen's popularity in Europe and whether we should see the show in Italy or Spain. So I've had wacky conversations with him, but I watching him from afar and watching the Cubs thing, you know, after he left, and then watching the Anaheim thing after that, the game is humbling, right? The game spits you out, right? Even if you're Joe Madden, you're going to the Hall of Fame, eventually they throw you out, right?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that's true. But it's just to have that type of, you know, I'll never forget. We were in Pittsburgh one time playing the Pirates, and there was a kid on the field that was obviously very sick. You know, he was sick. And Joe saw him, and Joe was like, why don't you have him come over? Got him in the dugout, sat down with this kid. Joe talked to this kid for a half an hour. Difficult conversations, not you know, these were conversations about how his health was, how his mental state was. This kid was probably about 13. And it got time to go, and they take Nikhage off the field for BP. And Joe said, I'm going to sit here for a little while longer. And when the kid left the field, he said, you know something, I just learned something from him that I've never heard before, but it's a great way to go about your life. And Joe wrote this on his lineup card. I think still today, if he was managing, he would write this on his lineup card every day. And it was a little thing this kid said to him, 13-year-old kid who's dying with cancer. And he said, courage plus belief equals life. And that was such a moment for Joe. I mean, it was like this thing where he's like, that kid, just that's what he came up with while he's been ill. And it was a really cool moment to be around, you know.
I need a crab cake with Joe Madden. Damn it. That's it. Rick Vaughn is here. He works for Respect 90, a longtime PR guy with the Orioles, the Rays. We don't talk about the Washington football thing, although I do appreciate the Super Bowl ticket that year that you went. Listen, every year, Dave Peitsch and I at the top of that Steelers, Cowboys, the Switzer Super Bowl in Tempe. My thanks to you all these years later for making that happen. Hey, thanks for coming on. Certainly, I'd love to see you at the golf tournament up in Hazleton that you do with Joe. If Joe ever needs anything in Baltimore, and he always is running, he always needs a crab cake, I'm sure. So I appreciate the time with you and time well spent, as always, talking about baseball. Most of your life, a lot of my life involved in baseball, right?
Hey, you know, I still miss it. So this is like therapy to me. So thank you.
Hey, that Bill Ripken thing behind you is therapy to me. So,
That was during the 21-game losing streak.
Hey, listen, man. I recently had a lunch with his nephew. His nephew is going to be the most successful Ripken out of all the Ripkens. I'm convinced.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Really? I'm ready to bet on Ryan Ripken. How about that?
I hope so. Good.
Appreciate you, man. Rick Vaughn, he is checking in from St. Pete. The Birds are in Tampa for a short series, but we didn't get a whole lot of baseball into that thing. I mean, there'll be time for Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson and all those guys to figure it out. Luke's going to be at the ballpark all weekend as the Seattle Mariners make their way into town. I'm going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, like, kind of everywhere. I am immersed in oysters and crab cakes all summer long. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'll be giving away these very, very lucky 50th anniversary scratch-offs, as well as our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. That's at Spirits West on Wilkins Avenue. My dude Chad Wiesling's going to be coming out talking about being an NFL agent for the top running back in the market who can't get signed. He lives in Canton. He's going to join me in West Baltimore. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking, especially when we have guys from out of town. Crabs and crab cakes with Rick Vaughn. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.